to turn to Psalm 35. And just a quick word, I think we're having something here going on Friday night. We need cornbread. We need cornbread and helpers. And if people wanted to help, they should show up like whenever. Anytime after 3. And the big shebang starts at 5:30. And it's just going to be a great night. We're going to have a lot of fun. Come whether you bring kids or not. Even if you don't bring kids, hey, come and have a blast, because we're going to have a great time. It's this Pioneer Days, and like they've got this group coming in that does these, that puts on these shows for schools, and I guess like you get to pan for gold and all this kind of cool stuff. So it'll be fun. It'll be a great time for the kids. And so come on out. It'd be a great chance. It'd even be a good time just to get to know other people in the church, just to kind of hang out and have a lot of fun. So that's Friday night. Psalm 35. Psalm 35, it says, the title says it's a Psalm of David. And it has been suggested by some that this could have been written around the time when he was running from Saul. You'll figure it out as we're reading. Psalm 35. David says, "Plead my cause, O Lord, with them that strive with me. Fight against them that fight against me." He says, "Strive against them that fight against me. Plead my cause with them that strive against me." The word "strive" there means to be a contender. I could have been a contender, to be an opponent, to be an adversary. Of those that are my adversaries, fight against them that fight against me. The word for fighting is to do battle, to make war. God, help me. Take hold of shield and buckler. Stand up for mine help. Draw out also the spear and stop the way against them that persecute me. Say unto my soul, I am thy salvation. I like that. God, speak to my soul. Tell me that you're going to help me. I like this. Verse 4. Let them be confounded and put to shame that seek after my soul. Let them be turned back and brought to confusion that devise my hurt. Let them be as chaff before the wind, and let the angel of the Lord chase them. Remember on Sunday we talked about who the angel of the Lord was. Well, there he's kind of popping up there. Verse 6, let their way be dark and slippery, and let the angel of the Lord persecute them. Who is the angel of the Lord? It's Jesus. It's a specific individual in the Old Testament. This is a unique, specific Hebrew phrase that refers to an individual. It's used 58 times in the Old Testament. And that was all Sunday. You can get the tape from Sunday or look up on the web and look at what we did when we did... what did we do Sunday? Psalm... I can't remember what psalm we did on Sunday. Psalm 34 we did. That's what we did. Anyway... it's Jesus. Verse 7. For without cause have they hid for me their net in a pit, which without cause they have digged for my soul. Craig, you're praying for people who have difficult times at work. Work with difficult people. Hey, this is like an interesting psalm to be thinking about, isn't it? Because sometimes you kind of feel like, you know, this guy's out for me. This guy's out to get me or something. Interesting stuff here. He says, for without cause they have hid for me their net in a pit. Without cause, for no good reason, as our kids would say. They did it for no good reason. They're after me for no good reason. Sometimes people have a reason to hate us. 1 Peter 4:14 says, if ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part, he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. And so Peter's saying, you know, look, we're going to go through tough times. People are going to come against us. And sometimes it's because you're a Christian. Sometimes it's because you're a jerk. He says, don't let any of you suffer because you're a jerk. Because you're a, what does he say, a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or a busybody. You're always nosy and into people's affairs and stuff. Well, he says, don't, you know, if you're on your own, buddy, if you're suffering because you're a jerk and you're just an obnoxious person at work, well, you know, that's not going to help you any. There's a verse, Proverbs 25:17. This is New American Standard. It says this: let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. You know, there are some folks who come over and drop in and visit and then just like to stay for no good reason. And they just kind of grinds on you. Well, he's saying, you know, people are giving you a hard time because this is who you are. Well, you know, that's, you know, well, they have a good reason for being mean to you. But well, sometimes we do stupid things. A young executive was leaving the office late one evening when he found the CEO standing in front of a shredder with a piece of paper in his hand. Listen, said the CEO, this is a very sensitive and important document here, and my secretary is gone for the night. Can you make this thing work? Certainly, said the young executive. He turned the machine on, inserted the paper, and pressed the start button. Excellent, excellent, said the CEO. And as the paper disappeared into the machine, he said, excellent, excellent, I just need one copy. As he stuck it in the shredder. You know what? Sometimes we do stupid stuff. And sometimes there's a reason for people to get in our face and to be mean to us. But hear what David's talking about. Verse 7, for without cause, they're just in my face for nothing. That happens sometimes. Verse 8, let destruction come upon him at unawares, and let his net that he hath hid catch himself. Into that very destruction let him fall. And God, let them fall into their own trap. Verse 9, and my soul shall be joyful in the Lord. It shall rejoice in his salvation. All my bones shall say, Lord, who is like unto thee, which deliverest the poor from him that is too strong for him, yea, the poor and the needy from him that spoileth him. False witnesses, he says, verse 11, false witnesses did rise up. They laid to my charge things that I knew not. They rewarded me evil for good to the spoiling of my soul. False witnesses have risen up. I think, you know, David's not only describing some of his own experience, but we see this in the life of Jesus. Let's look at Matthew 26, verse 59. It says, now the chief priests and the elders and all the council, this is after they've arrested Jesus, they sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. And at the last came two false witnesses. Now, they tried to bring somebody, they tried to get some people together to cook up something against Jesus. And they kept, you know, they said, well, I saw him doing this and doing that. And it was all kind of silly stuff. And everybody was going to laughing at him. And finally, they found somebody who came up with a decent story, verse 61. And they said, this fellow said, and this is what the false witnesses said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. Now, he actually said that. He did. Now, he didn't mean it the way that they're taking it. He was talking about what? He was talking about his own body. Verse 62, and the high priest arose and said unto him, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus saith unto him, thou hast said. In other words, you said it, buddy. Nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent or tore his clothes, saying, "You have spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye?" And they answered, and they said, "He is guilty of death." And Jesus was claiming to be the Son of God. The only problem is that was true. It wasn't false. It would be blasphemy if you or I tried to say that. Oh yeah, then you're right. You let them get you. But this is the truth. Isn't it amazing? I mean, really, when you think about it, think about what Jesus did for 3.5 years, or 3 years think of the kinds of stuff that he did. I mean, he healed people, he fed people, he taught people, he raised people from the dead, he calmed storms, and they want to put this guy to death? You know, what's the problem here? What's wrong with your head? I mean, have you ever thought about that? Why in the world did they do this? And they're trying to come up with false witnesses. Makes no sense, does it? You're probably going to find in your own life that there are going to be people who are going to say stuff about you. And it's bogus, it's stupid, it makes no sense. And in some of the situations, you're going to think, "I don't get this. What's this all about? What have I done? I haven't done anything. What's this all about?" And you're going to feel just like David. You're going to know what Jesus went through. But let me flip that around. Jesus knows what you're going through. This is part of the problems we face living on this planet. It's not you, it's the planet. It's the fact that you are living among sinful people. And you know what? It hurts like all get out. When people say stupid things about you and hold things against you that are stupid. It's stupid. What's the problem here? You know what? You're not alone. You're not alone. Go back and read Psalm 35. For without cause, you know, and this false witnesses, this is... They reward me evil for good. I mean, I've done good stuff and they're slapping me around. I don't get this. You know what? Jesus knows what it's like. Verse 13. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting and my prayer returned unto mine own bosom. Now, the sackcloth, that's a deal of mourning. It's a thing. It's a way of saying, "God, I'm serious about something." And so he's saying, look, when they were sick, I prayed my heart out for them. I prayed my guts out, David is saying. Verse 14, I behaved myself as though he had been my friend or brother. I bowed down heavily as one that mourneth for his mother. But in mine adversity, they rejoiced and gathered themselves together. Yea, the abjects or the attackers gathered themselves together against me, and I knew it not, and they did tear me and ceased not. Now, there's a couple ways you can go with this. Because see, there are going to be times when people that you have loved and poured out your heart to and done everything wonderfully for, you built into these people, you poured your life into people, and sometimes some of those people are gonna hurt you. And you can use that as a reason to complain. You say, "Well, it's not fair. I mean, I did all this for them and look how they're paying me back." But you know what, beloved? That's not what we're supposed to do. We can become bitter and we can say, "Well, I'm not gonna help anybody anymore. Because look what I get for it. Look all the trouble it gets me." No. Jesus said, you know, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and somebody smacks you around, you smack them back. And Jesus said, you're not supposed to be that way. You're supposed to be like your Father in heaven, who rains good things on good people and yucky people. God is compassion. You are to be perfect like your Father in heaven. You are to love your enemies. You are to bless those who persecute you. Don't let it become a reason for your bitterness. Let it be your way of life. To bless, well, I don't know if I should be nice to this person. What if they turn out to be the next one who's going to stab me in the back? Don't go that route. Don't go down that road. Love your enemies. Keep loving. Stay sensitive. Keep your heart tender. Verse 16. With hypocritical mockers and feasts, they gnashed upon me with their teeth. Lord, how long wilt thou look on? Rescue my soul from their destructions, my darling from the lions. I mean, help me. I will give thee thanks in the great congregation. I will praise thee among much people. Let not them that are mine enemies wrongfully rejoice over me, neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without cause. Don't let them just have a great time because they're hurting me. For they speak not peace, but they devise deceitful matters against them that are quiet in the land. Yea, they opened their mouth wide against me and said, Aha! Aha! Our eye hath seen it! This thou hast seen, O Lord. Keep not silence. O Lord, be not far from me. Stir up thyself and awake to my judgment, even unto my cause, my God and my Lord. Stir up thyself and awake to my judgment, even my cause, my God and my Lord. Judge me, O Lord, my God, according to thy righteousness. Let them not rejoice over me. Let them not say in their hearts, Ah, so would we have it. Let them not say, We have swallowed him up. Let them be ashamed and brought to confusion together that rejoice at mine hurt. Let them be clothed with shame and dishonor that magnify themselves against me. Let them shout for joy and be glad that favor my righteousness, my righteous cause. Yea, let them say continually, Let the Lord be magnified, which hath pleasure in the prosperity of his servant. And my tongue shall speak of thy righteousness and of thy praise all the day long. Just two quick things. We're going to have trouble with people. We're going to have trouble with people. And the whole point of this psalm, like many of David's psalms, when he talks about having trouble with people, is what is he doing? He's putting it in God's hands. You know, he says, stir yourself up and help. What's he saying? He's saying, God, I need you to take care of this problem. In Romans 12, it says, don't take your own revenge, beloved. God's the one that says, vengeance is mine. I'll take care of this. You look at some of David's prayers and you say, well, that's not really loving your enemies. He's saying, God, just smack them upside the head and embarrass them and, you know, just really get them, God. And what's he saying? He's saying, God, you take care of it. It may not come out really nice and pretty and everything, but he's saying, God, you take care of the problem. And the last thing is, you notice in verse 28, he goes back to praising the Lord all the day long. That's where we need to get back to, is get back to praising the Lord. Psalm 36. To the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord. Verse 1. The transgression of the wicked saith within my heart that there is no fear of God before his eyes. That's a rough translation, very rough. New Living Translation says this. Sin whispers to the wicked deep within their hearts. They have no fear of God to restrain them. So he's just talking about what's going on in the heart of wicked people. These first four verses, he's talking about wicked people. Verse 2, for he flattereth himself in his own eyes until his iniquity be found to be hateful. Again, another translation says, in their blind conceit, they cannot see how wicked they really are. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He hath left off to be wise and to do good. He deviseth mischief upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil. He's talking about wicked people, wicked men. And this verse 2, I like this one translation. In their blind conceit, they cannot see how wicked they really are. You know, this description of wicked people, they can't see their own faults. They can't see their own problems. I think where the challenge is for me, do you ever have that experience where you watch somebody in their life, you're observing somebody and you're thinking, man, this guy's got a huge problem and he doesn't even know. Can't even tell. You know, somebody, you know, I guess as a musician, I can think of times where people have, you know, tried to get up on a microphone and it's just like, you know, it's just like, you know, you like want to cover your ears and scream or run out of the room or unplug the microphone or something or, you know, hit the mute button or something, you know. And sometimes I ask myself, can't they tell how off they are? You ever thought that kind of stuff? About somebody with, maybe it's somebody at work. Maybe it's somebody that's doing something really stupid. It's like, boy, buddy, can't you tell what the, oh my gosh, what are you doing? You can't even see it. You ever think that way about people? Do you? Do you wonder if people ever think that way about you? It freaks me out. See, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be like this where I'm so conceited that I can't see my own faults. And this is a story. I like this story. I've read it before, but I like this story. It's a British painter and engraver named William Hogarth. He was once commissioned to paint the portrait of an exceptionally ugly nobleman. As was his custom, he depicted the subject with the utmost frankness and realism. When the nobleman saw the portrait, he refused to pay for it, and a bitter discussion ensued. Because the guy, he looked really ugly in the painting. It was just the way he was. Eventually, Hogarth, needing the money, sent a letter to his client, saying that a certain showman who specialized in exhibiting freaks and monstrosities was interested in the portrait. Unless Hogarth received payment within 3 days, he would embellish the picture with a tail and other appendages and sell it to the showman for exhibition. The guy paid up, and then he burned the portrait. But what's that say? That's a guy who doesn't want to admit who he is and what he's like. Can you see your own fault? I pray that I'm not blind to my own faults. I don't want to be blind to my own faults. I want to know where I gotta work, what I need to work on. Verse 5, it's really cool. First he talks about the wickedness of men, and then he just like changes channels, totally changes channels. Verse 5, "Thy mercy, O Lord, is in the heavens, and thy faithfulness reacheth unto the clouds." He's going to talk for a couple of verses about how good God is, how wonderful. It's like night and day between this ugliness of the wicked people, and then he flips and talks about how good God is. Verse 6, "Thy righteousness is like the great mountains. Thy judgments are a great deep, O Lord. Thou preservest man and beast. How excellent is thy loving kindness, O God. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wings." God, you are so good. That's why people trust in you. Because, God, you are so good. Verse 8, "They shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, and thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasures." I mean, this is, I love the word pictures here. It's just great, great stuff here. Verse 9, "For with thee is the fountain of life. In thy light shall we see light." In thy light shall we see light. Let's look at Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5. Jesus changes our perspective on things. Luke chapter 5, verse 1. When we rely on the amount of light that comes from us, we don't see very clearly. And you don't see a lot of the details in your own life. But when you step out of your own light and step into His light, man, it's you see a whole lot. Luke chapter 5, verse 1. It says, "And it came to pass, as the people pressed upon Him to hear the word of God, He stood by the lake of Gennesaret," which is Galilee. "And He saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were gone out of them and were washing their nets. And He entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed or asked Him that He would thrust out a little from the land. And He sat down and taught the people out of the ship." Now that was a very cool thing, because the people were all up close to Him, and he couldn't get away far enough for them to address the whole crowd. And so he gets in this boat, and his water's all calm. He kind of goes out a few feet, and now he can address everybody. So he teaches the people just this wonderful thing. And he teaches the people out of the ship. Verse 4. "Now when He had left speaking, He said to Simon," okay, he's finished. He's finished, and He says, "Okay, you guys can all go home. Let's sing of the Lord bless thee, Lord bless thee." They did, you know, they wound up the service. I don't know if they did an altar call and made people come forward, because they probably might have drowned or something. But he winds it up, and he says, and it says, he said to Simon, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught or for a catch." And Simon answering said unto Him, "Master, we have toiled all the night and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at Thy word, we will let down the net." I mean, you know, Jesus, you know, you're cool. You say some neat things, but you're a carpenter. I'm a fisherman. You know, buddy, we've been out there all night. You don't go fishing in the morning. You stop fishing in the morning. Okay, we'll do this. Verse 6, "And when they had done this, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake. And they beckoned..." Now, I can just... did Jesus, like, whistle for the fish? "Here, fishy, fishy." I don't know. "And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, they should come and help them. And they came, and they filled both the ships, so that they began to sink." This is a few fish. We're not just talking to three or four guppies here. I mean, we're talking a lot of fish. "When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' feet, saying, 'Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord.' For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the catch of the fish which they had taken. And so was also James and John, the sons of Zebedee, partners of Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, 'Fear not. From henceforth thou shalt catch men.' And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him." I was kind of thinking, it's kind of interesting. I don't want to make too much out of this, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Peter must not have been really impressed with Jesus' teaching. Please don't take this wrong. I think Jesus is probably the most marvelous teacher that ever walked. Okay. But probably Peter wasn't really thinking about it. He's just been out fishing all night, just finished washing his nets. Now this guy wants to borrow the boat. And so he's probably kind of like, you know, just kind of, I don't know if he's dozing off, you know, I every once in a while, some of you do that, you know, I know what it's like, because I've done it plenty of times myself, you know, in church, you know, you kind of, and you just don't really, it's not really that big of a deal. And then Jesus really gets his attention. And he gets his attention with something that would only get Peter's attention, probably. I don't know. I don't know if Matthew the tax collector would have got his attention. But it got Peter's attention, and James and John, because they were fishermen. And it blows them away to see what Jesus has done. The light got turned on. The light got turned on. And it wasn't just a little teeny light bulb. It was a huge 200,000 watt halogen flood lamp shining into Peter who Jesus was. And Peter says, depart from me. I am a sinful man. Why didn't you get that earlier, Peter? Well, I don't know if you're snoozing or what. But it's Jesus' light. It made Peter aware. It changed his perspective when he saw who Jesus was. And David is saying, for with thee is the fountain of life. In thy light shall we see light. God, when we get close to you and we let you light up what's going on in our lives and we see just who we really are. I mean, you know, if I just stay in my dark little corner in my bedroom, you know, I can get along, I can do whatever I want because it's not real light, you know. And I might trip over stuff and stub my toe, but I can survive, you know, with just a little teeny nightlight or something. But man, when you spend time with Jesus, be prepared. Because he's going to light everything up. You're going to see lots of stuff of who you are. Back to the Psalm 36, verse 10. And so he makes a prayer. And he says, oh, continue thy loving kindness unto them that know thee, and thy righteousness to the upright in heart. Let not the foot of pride come against me, and let not the hand of the wicked remove me. There are the workers of iniquity fallen. They are cast down and shall not be able to rise. I've fallen down and I can't get up. And so he starts off talking about wicked people, people who can't even see their own problems. Then he flips and he talks about who God is. He reminds himself of who God is and God's ability to light everything up. And then he turns it all over to God. He says, God, you take care of this. You need to help me. Psalm 37. We love this one. This is a favorite psalm for many of us. There's many great treasures in this psalm. Psalm 37, a psalm of David. If you look at verse 25... This is kind of, verse 25 says this, I have been young and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. Whatever the circumstances were, David is old. This is written, it's got to be towards the end of his life. He's been through some stuff. Why is that important? Because these are tested and tried principles. This isn't, you know, stuff I used to teach 25 years ago or 25 years ago. Did I used to teach 25? Oh my gosh, I did. I was a youth pastor 25 years ago. Oh, isn't that scary? I was only 3 years old at the time. Yeah. Yep, Sarah remembers. Yep. I think there's somebody else in this room that remembers when I was her youth pastor. That wasn't 25 years ago. She's only 25, yeah. You know what? I don't teach exactly the same stuff that I did 25 years ago. I used to really know it all 25 years ago. Did you find this true, Paul? Is this the way it works in your life? I really knew everything. Everything was black and white. I knew the answers to everybody's problems. And when people came up to me for counsel and stuff, no problem. I remember the three steps to fixing that problem, you know. And I would, you know, flip through my note cards and, oh, yeah, I learned that one yesterday. Yeah, I know how stuff works. And I don't know if it's just, maybe I've got leaky brainitis. I don't know. But the older I get, the more I realize I really don't know a lot. Don't get me wrong. I know a lot more than I did then. That's why I know that I don't know as much. Does that make sense to you? If you don't understand that, it's because you're under the age of 30 or something. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't want to offend anybody. But I remember saying stuff that now I go look back and I just shudder. you know, things you'd say in confidence. Well, this is the way you live your life. You do these five steps and boom, hoo-wee, you're going to have victory over your sin. I've got the five-step plan, or it was a three-step plan, or a two-step plan, or whatever it is, you know. And you know what? I'm not sure there are that kinds of stuff. You know what? God has, don't get me wrong, God has victory in our lives. God wants to deliver us in our lives. But I'm not so sure it's cookie-cutter stuff and we'll just one-size-fits-all deliver, you know, kind of a thing. Life's a little more complicated than that. Like a whole lot more complicated than that. Don't you think? And you're all a bunch of old fogies in here, most of you. And so why is it important that I point out that David writes this at the end of his life? Because David says some wonderful, marvelous promises in this psalm. And this is a psalm, this has got promises that I've been clinging to for 25, 30 years. Well, I've been a Christian now for 33 years. And some of my favorite promises are in this psalm. And you know what? These are tested, tried and true things. These aren't things said at the beginning of his life that he kind of really wished he kind of hadn't said it so forcefully, you know. These are tried and true things. So pay attention to these things. This psalm is filled with treasures. It's almost like a miniature. I was thinking it's almost like a miniature book of Proverbs, almost. You know, some of the things in this psalm. Anyway, we're just going to look at a couple of the things because there's way too much in this psalm, and I'm going to go through chapter 39 tonight because I want to do 40 on Sunday morning. Just hold on. We're going to get through this. Okay, Psalm 37. Fret not thyself because of evildoers. Neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. One of the themes you're going to see woven through this psalm, in and out, over and over through this psalm, is going to be dealing with evildoers, wicked people. People give you a hard time. And he's going to give you little nuggets of advice. And here's one of them. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I heard that this story of a what was it? It's a real story because I heard the guy that was telling it. He was saying that when he was younger, he was out fishing. This fellow's a pastor, and when he was younger, he was out fishing with an older pastor, a guy who'd been around for a while. And they were talking about people that were causing trouble in the church, and the older pastor said, "Well, let me tell you what to do with people who cause you trouble. Just do what God does. Outlive them." And you know what? That's kind of what David's saying here. You know what? Don't worry about people who are causing you trouble. They're going to go away one day. One day. They're going to go away. He says, they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Don't just outlive them. Don't fret it. Outlive them. Verse 3. Trust in the Lord and do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. There's tons of promises right in this thing. But the thing I just want to encourage you with is faith and action. Trust in the Lord and do good. Trust in the Lord and do good. There's that old song, trust and obey. Faith and action. It's not trust and snooze. It's trust and obey. Trust and do's. Not trust and snooze, but trust and do's. I'm not talking about salvation. I'm not talking about, are we saved by good works or are we saved by faith? The Bible's very clear about that. We are saved by faith. But James points out in James chapter 2, the salvation that saves us isn't a faith that just sleeps. It's a faith that has action. It's a faith that produces works. It's faith that works. That's the real kind of faith. And so David here, he says, trust in the Lord and do good. You know what? There's going to be some times where God's going to say, you know what? In this situation, I don't want you doing anything. Just sit and watch me do this. There's going to be those times. Believe me, there will be. But there are other times where God says, you need to trust me and you need to get up and do this. Trust and obey. Faith and action. Verse 4. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. It's one of my favorite promises. I do believe that this verse is saying that if you put God first in your life, then what he gives you is the desires for the right things. I'm not sure that this is necessarily the magic key to health and wealth and everything you ever dreamed of before you were a Christian. That's not where this is going. This is not the magic key to how to get my stuff. It's not about the stuff. If you look carefully at it, it's about delighting yourself in the Lord. That's the thrust of the verse. Yes, he will give you the desires of your heart, but God wants you to delight in him. It's about wanting the right thing. And the right thing is not the stuff. The right thing is the Lord. And so when we get hung up on this and we start thinking, well, gosh, I've been praying, God, and you know, and I've been quoting Psalm 37:4, delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. And so, Lord, why don't I have this thing yet? Because you're looking at the wrong thing. It's not about the stuff. It's about the Lord. Even if the thing that you want is good and right and godly, and maybe it's even something God wants for you, the fact that you're disappointed shows you missed the verse. Do you see that? Because it's all about delighting in the Lord. And when he is your delight, you're not too worried about whether you get the stuff or not, because you've got the Lord. Does that make sense? This is a quote from Oswald Chambers, from my utmost for his highest. Think of the last thing you prayed about. Were you devoted to your desire or to God? Determined to get some gift of the Spirit or to get at God? Your Father knows what you need before you ask him. The point of asking is that you may get to know God better. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Keep praying in order to get a perfect understanding of God himself. Be willing to rethink some of the things on your prayer list. Prayer is not about God getting your will done. Prayer is not about, I've got this list, God, and I've been rubbing the magic lamp. I'm waiting for the genie to appear. When do I get my three wishes? Prayer is not about your will getting done. It's about God's will getting done. And God's will getting done starts with your heart. Your heart being connected and tied in and delighting in him. I've been noticing that sometimes when I pray for people, sometimes I will go, sometimes there's certain people that I pray for. And as I'm praying for, I pray for the people in the church directory. That's one of my routines. It's one of my habits on Wednesday night. I feel like I need to do that to kind of get my heart in the right place when I'm preparing my message on Wednesday. And so I will go down, for those of you who are in the church directory, I will go down and I pray for each of you by name. And And I try to do it in a way that as I think about you and I see your smiling faces in my head and stuff, and I sometimes I feel like God gives me things to pray. Sometimes I've been finding that I think I know what you need. And so I pray for what you really need. Because God, I know what this person needs to get fixed. And you know what? I've been finding myself getting awfully anxious and worried in prayer when I do that. Because God, when are they going to get it? You know, when's this person going to get this? And you're all going, is this what he's praying for me? And you know what? I've been feeling like God is teaching me. Is that, you know what? What if the things I'm asking for aren't what God wants? It's about His will, about God doing His work, and not about me playing God and trying to tell Him what each of you needs. What if God has something? What if God really doesn't care what I think about you? You know, what if He's really got some other things for you? I want to be open to that. So put your focus on Him. It doesn't mean you don't pray. Oh yeah, you absolutely do pray. We want to grow in that. We want to learn to get closer to Him and to let Him give us those desires of things to pray for. But the focus has always got to be, I'm pressing in on Him. I want to know Him better. I want to delight in Him. That's the whole goal. Verse 5, commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in Him, and He shall bring it to pass. The word that's translated commit, it means to roll down, to roll together, to roll away. Spurgeon says this, he says, it means to roll the whole burden of life upon the Lord. Commit thy way unto the Lord. Just roll all of your way, all of your path, all of your life. Roll it over unto Him. Verse 6. And He shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for Him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because the Lord who bringeth, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger. Forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. This is an advice from an old man who says, you know what, stop being so angry. It ain't doing you any good. I learned that, he's saying. Verse 10, for yet a little while, and the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. What? Where did he go? I don't know. I can't find him. He's gone. Verse 11, but the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The wicked plotteth against the just, and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn out the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and needy and to slay such as be of upright conversation. Their sword shall enter their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. David knew all this. He's looked back over his life and he's looked at all the people that have caused him trouble. And you know what? Gosh, God, you took care of me. You took care of me every time. Verse 16, a little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of the wicked. Stop wanting to get all the stuff that the wicked people have. Just, you know, be content with what God gives you. Verse 17, for the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous. The Lord knoweth the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. But the wicked shall perish, and the enemies of the Lord shall be as the fat of lambs. They shall consume into smoke, shall they consume away. The wicked borroweth and payeth not again, or does not repay. But the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. There's a dangerous mentality that I've seen among some folks who get to thinking that the world owes them a living. And they expect other people to pay their way. And as a Christian, I get confused by this. I know that it is important to give to those in need. I want to make sure you understand me here. It's very important that we give to people in need. I know that the scripture, I know in Matthew 25, Jesus says that if you do this unto the least of these, you do this unto me. And so, yes, if you're helping a poor person, it's like you're helping Jesus, is kind of what he's saying. Giving a cup of cold water in his name. The Bible says to consider the poor. We're going to see that in Psalm 41. The Bible says that those who have pity on the poor lend to the Lord. That's Proverbs 19:17. So, I mean, that's pretty cool to think that, you know, you are God's mortgage banker. You know, he's making payments to you because you were kind to a poor person. That's what he's saying. You lend to the Lord if you're kind to a poor person. The problem comes when you, as a Christian, don't see where it's all going. And when a person's entire life becomes one of always, where's my handout? Where's my handout? Where's my handout? See, there's a time when we are needy. There's a time when we do need to ask for help. Absolutely. Absolutely. But the goal is always to get to the point where you can get back and give to others. Life is not about what you get. It's about what you give. And so here, very clearly, David says, the wicked borroweth and payeth not again. He's always asking for more, always asking for more. Where he says, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. Paul says in Ephesians 4:28, he says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. In other words, Paul's saying to the church, look, for the person who has lived their life by taking from people all the time, they need to change. And their life needs to be to the point where they start taking care of themselves, even to the point of helping out with others. That needs to be what we're shooting for. And when people don't want to get there, then there's something wrong. And I think we need to be careful about that. I think we want people to see this is where you need to be going. Let's move on. Verse 22. For such as be blessed of him shall inherit the earth, and they that be cursed of him shall be cut off. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. And in other words, you know what? Every one of us stumbles. Every one of us falls on our face. But God will pick you back up. Verse 25. I have been old and now am, I have been young and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. He is ever merciful and lendeth, and his seed is blessed. Depart from evil and do good, dwell forevermore. For the Lord loveth judgment and forsaketh not his saints, they are preserved forever. But the seed of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell therein forever. Let's skip down to verse 40. And the Lord shall help them. No, verse 39. The salvation of the righteous is of the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. One of the key things of this whole psalm is trust. He uses lots of different words. He talks about trusting, delighting, committing, resting, waiting patiently, and waiting, and just simply the word for wait. And think about the guy who's writing this. This is a guy who had a ton of trouble in his life. He's the guy that faced Goliath. He's the guy that faced the Philistine armies. He's the guy that ran from Saul. He's the guy that was still fighting Philistines. When he became king, he would still be at war with the rest of the nation of Israel. Even after that was resolved, then he had wars with the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Philistines, all the Hittites and Itites and all this kind of stuff. He was in trouble. All of Absalom, his son, rebels against him, kicks him out of town. He's even as he's going out of town, this guy named Shimei is cursing him and throwing rocks, and it's just like trouble, trouble, trouble. And now, as an old man, he's saying, "You know what? Just don't stop trusting the Lord. Don't stop trusting the Lord. It's all about trusting the Lord." Psalm 38 is a psalm of David talking about guilt and pain. Let's get a little taste of it. He says, "O Lord, rebuke me not in thy wrath, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure, for thine arrows stick fast in me, and thy hand presseth me sore. There is no soundness in my flesh because of thine anger, neither is there any rest in my bones because of my sin. For mine iniquities are gone over my head as a heavy burden, they are too heavy for me. My wounds stink and are corrupt because of my foolishness. I am troubled, I am bowed down greatly, I go mourning all the day long. For my loins are filled with a loathsome disease, and there is no soundness in my flesh." It sounds very much like Psalm 32. We're talking about the heavy weight and the guilt of sin. And in verse 11, he says, "All my lovers and my friends stand aloof from my sore. My kinsmen stand afar off." In the midst of all this heaviness, this weight, this guilt, everybody leaves you. Verse 15, "For in thee, O Lord, do I hope. Thou wilt hear, O Lord, my God." Verse 18, "For I will declare mine iniquity. I will be sorry for my sin." That's the answer to guilt and condemnation. Putting your hope in the Lord and confessing your sin. Admitting that you have a problem. Asking for God's help. Psalm 39. This is another psalm about sin, guilt, and heaviness. Verse 1, "I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace, even from good, and my sorrow was stirred." Sometimes it's good to keep your mouth shut. The Proverbs is filled with stuff talking about, you know what, just shut up. You know, the righteous person knows to shut up. The wicked person is the foolish person is always just spouting stuff off. I've heard people say it's better to keep your mouth shut and let them think that you're a fool than to open it and dispel all doubt. There's a place for being silent. Verse 3, "My heart was hot within me while I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue, Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am." That's, you know, what a lot of people are thinking about right now. Life is fragile. What we've seen happen over the last week in Southern California, with the red skies and the smoke and the homes burned, life is pretty, pretty fragile. And it's a good thing to think about that. It's a good thing to think about how fragile life is. Moses writes in Psalm 90, says, "Teach us to number our days." God, help us to pay attention that life is very, very fragile. I mean, and it's gone. Verse 7, "And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee." My hope is in thee. We've got to hope in the Lord. That is the key to life. Let's stand and pray.